On this edition of the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our YouTube recap channel, R-E-K-A-P, and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. Gordon Whitmire and I get into the latest with the Cubs. Is Juan Soto a realistic possibility? And should the Cubs make a move for a guy with 1 year left of team control? And is Kyle Schwarber one of the worst non-tenders in baseball history? Welcome into the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our recap channel on YouTube. That's R-E-K-A-P and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcast. With my partner, Gordon Whitmire, I'm David Kaplan. All right, Gordon, we're going to get into a number of topics here. First, we're going to start with, it's a lot of smoke that the Padres might be willing to move Juan Soto. Their ownership is not happy spending the inordinate amount of money they spent, and they don't think they can get him re-signed to an extension because it's going to be approaching $450, $500 million, and he did not have a great year this year. So if he's available, he's got 1 year left before free agency. He has Scott Boras as his agent. What I'm being told is he won't come cheap because he's going to make $30 million in arbitration or whatever you agree on, and you're going to have to give up good players, but you probably don't have to give up your top two guys. Would you do that if you're the Cubs?
Well, let me just back up a minute. I don't know what you consider not a great season or a great season, but this dude played every single game, led the league in walks, and hit 35 home runs, had a 930 OPS. He's going to get MVP votes. I don't mean first place, but he could finish in the top six in MVP voting, six or seven, for a team that didn't make the playoffs. He had the best offensive year on that club, a club full of stars, by the way, and he's not yet 25 years old. So I think he had a great year. I think he's exactly the guy you should go all in to try to get from a hitting standpoint.
Yep.
Because he's that left-handed bat, because he's so young, because he does so many things for you. And you could justify the big contract for him. Right. So, and I don't know what else you have that can approach this coming in the system. I mean, this guy was, you know, that term generational player gets way overused. If you believe most of the people in our business who use that term, there's 50 generational players every year. This guy actually is. This guy, for the first 3, 4, 5 years of his career, compared favorably to like Ted Williams and nobody else, right?
Well, that's what they called him. They called him Little Ted Williams or the next Ted Williams.
That's what I'm saying. So yes, if you can, you should absolutely be all in on trying to get him. It's obviously a long shot just because the demand figures to be high enough that at least a few other teams are going to come in pretty hard on him. Some of them might have better farm systems or more or players maybe willing to give up more players, maybe even willing to spend more. I don't know. The Cubs absolutely should be in on this, and they should be in on it in a big way.
Okay, so if they said to you, it's going to cost you, leave the top two guys out of it, Pete Crow Armstrong and Cade Horton, but it's going to cost you
anybody else.
Prospects, I mean, 3, 4, 5, 8. Like, we're talking about a haul out of the system, and you only get them for 1 year, and Scott Boras says, No, we're not signing an extension. We don't even want to talk to you about an extension. Do you do it?
Yes.
Tell me why you do it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I want to know why you'd be willing.
Because you're the Chicago frickin' Cubs. And even if Scott says, well, we're not going to sign an extension, he's not going to shut the door either. Basically, when he says that, what he's saying is, you can talk to us in free agency just like everybody else. And the Cubs should compete with anybody they want to in free agency. So just because he says we're not signing an extension doesn't mean you won't get him long term, ultimately, if that's what you want, if he likes it in Chicago. But never mind that. Let's assume that that's off the table. You're in a position going into next year where you damn well better make the effing playoffs. It's been too long. This year was too big of a collapse, too much of a disappointment down the stretch. That's not going to be acceptable next year. It should not be acceptable next year. So you should be all in on this. A guy that's going to essentially replace Cody Bellinger and put up bigger numbers, play more games, and be the key to that whole lineup. You don't have to do anything else to your lineup if you bring this guy in. Honestly, I mean, defensively, you know, you're going to look for incremental fits, the things that fill out your lineup, but you don't have to do anything else to create offensive impact in your lineup if you go get this guy. It's a big price tag, player capital, the $30 million or whatever he's going to make as an arbitration eligible guy, whatever. You're going to have to pay that. If it's a 1-year deal, that contract's not terrible, and you still need to go get pitching, but you only need to add that one guy to have the offensive impact that you're looking for if you go get him.
If you get him, now how do you navigate your outfield? Because Ian Happ and Seiya Suzuki have no trade clauses.
I don't care.
I'm not saying you should. I'm asking also, how do you navigate that?
Well, you also have a DH spot.
Yep.
So you put it out there. I mean, he's not a gold glover. So you don't have to say, all right, dude, we're committing this position to you. Now, what I don't know is where his mentality is, his psychology when it comes to DH, because you can't take the chance that he's going to be one of these guys that struggles with that, right? And then hates it, and it impacts his production. So that's the only thing you have to consider when it comes to him on that. And so again, I go back to, I don't care if he can DH, he DHs. If one of these guys can play first base, they play first base. And that's how I handle it.
So if you brought him in here, does that shut the door on Cody Bellinger? Because you still need a first baseman.
It shuts the door on Cody Bellinger.
Why? You're the Chicago freaking Cubs is what you keep preaching to me.
Right. Are you only going to do lineup guys? This replaces that left-handed monster. This upgrades the left-handed monster in the middle of your order. You don't, it's not like you have this desperate need for two of them. I wouldn't spend the resources, particularly the player capital, to go out and get him if you're just going to keep Cody Bellinger and pay him the same amount of money. You still have to focus on improving the pitching. So assuming that there is some limitation to what they're willing to do, then get one of these guys. I do like the idea of Soto over Bellinger. Get one of these guys. If you're going to focus on Soto, get Soto. And then focus entirely on pitching other than that.
Yeah, I agree with you on getting Soto. I vehemently disagree with you. I'm not saying they're going to get both, but if you get Soto, that should not preclude you from going to get Bellinger to be your first baseman, because you still have to find one of those.
Yeah, well,
Matt Mervis is the guy. Great. I'm not convinced he is.
Let me throw one word of retort to this. Angels. How much money did they spend on Pujols and Rendon? And they had a homegrown guy in Trout, who they gave a massive extension to. Then they went and added Shohei to their lineup, but he was a pitcher too. So maybe don't even count him. But they spent all their marquee guys that they added for a decade were huge bats. And they haven't sniffed a championship.
But I'm not signing Soto Gordon to a long-term deal at that point. I'm pushing.
And you better win right now. And if you're going to win right now, you need more effing pitching. Period.
Agreed. Well, but then why can't you, Gordon? What do the smart executives say? There is no such thing as a bad 1-year deal. I'm test driving Juan Soto. I'm getting 5 years with Cody Bellinger at whatever the number is. I can afford both and get pitching.
Okay, go ahead and do that. I don't think they're going to do that. You're asking me? Like, I think Soto's plenty. And I think it's going to be tough enough to go out there and compete and to add the pitching you want. You might even have to go into the trade market to do it. So I want to keep some of those bullets available for that too. So if you're asking me, I go Soto. If I think I can get either one and I have the choice, I get Soto. Now, I think they're both long shots, right? You're asking me a capothetical. And so those are worth about what they sound like they're worth, right? So if you're going to box me in on that, that's my choice. I think you ought to get one.
So you take 1 year of Soto as opposed to 5 guaranteed years of Bellinger.
Well, you're not going to get Bellinger for 5, but yeah, if that's what you're putting out there, either one. Yeah, I still go for Soto for that 1 year. I think Soto is more bankable any given year than any other player is right now who might be available.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm expecting Soto, Ohtani, Bellinger, and the Japanese pitcher. I didn't say that. But what I am saying is you have got to find a way to get A, star power, B, left-handed difference-making pitching, hitting, and then a top-of-the-rotation starter.
Yeah.
Then you can win a World Series.
Yeah, you throw star power in there, and again, we can discuss how that's defined. You need to go out and Soto's star power. Cody Bellinger these days is star power.
Cody Bellinger's not superstar power. He's not.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about Soto, Ohtani, guys like that. I need a superstar in my lineup. The Cubs don't have one guy, with the exception of the last 85 days of Suzuki. Not one guy do you go, he hits top three on the Braves. He hits top three on the best team in the American League. We don't have that guy. Dansby Swanson on a good team is a 7-hole hitter.
No, and I'm not sure that just going out and getting that guy is going to make that difference all by itself either. And I'm not sure how many of those guys are available. It's part of why I say, boy, if Soto's really available and you're really serious and you're willing to give up what it takes to get him, go get him. But I don't know how many of those guys are out there. One of the things that Jed did, and you and I both had our different criticisms and differences of opinion with the things that they've done, including what Jed's done. But one of the things he did that worked these last couple of years, in particular last offseason, was by run prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, what run prevention does is, what do they say? Fielding doesn't slump, right?
Correct.
Guys have bad days. That's not what we're talking about. But you put a bunch of good fielders out there, and they've got the best middle infield defensively in the league. And then you can discuss if it's in all of baseball. But I would say in the league, best middle infield, Cody Bellinger was a plus glove wherever he played. And you got a left fielder who's got a gold glove on his resume, and Seiya Suzuki's won some of those awards. We'll forget that game down the stretch, but he's won some of those awards over in Japan. And they had Yan Gomes, a plus defender behind the plate. Those kinds of things are why they were able to have some success for streaks and that great month they had coming out of the All-Star break. That needs to continue to be part of their success. You talk about things like plans. That's part of their plan, right? So if you want to say go get Cody Bellinger and then keep that glove side of that equation in him and get him on a 5-year deal, or he's probably going to be looking more like 7 or 8, and he might get it.
I don't think anyone's giving him an 8-year deal.
Find out. We didn't think Chris Bryant was going to get what he got. I keep going back to that. Somebody's going to give it to him.
Yeah, and at some point, GMs are going to stop being brain dead and look and go, what a stupid deal that was.
They've been saying the same thing for 100 years, long before free agency. They used to say this. Owners used to complain about player salaries back before Babe Ruth. Go back and look some of this stuff up. It's the same shit that gets said over and over again. And this is an $11 billion industry with continuing revenue.
I'm not asking them to play for Social Security.
Well, what I'm saying is that it just doesn't hold water. Somebody's going to give them the friggin' money. It happens every year.
Pay him shorter term, higher AAV. So I get you off my godforsaken books if you stink.
We'll see. We'll see what happens on that. Maybe that works. Maybe they get him for that. Maybe that's a way to go. But back to your point. I mean, you know, this idea of run prevention, that also involves pitching. So this is something that they're going to, I think this is the direction that they're going to look. I think it's probably the way to go, given the success you've already had incrementally these last 2 years going that direction. And you've got some coming in the farm system. So I like that you are the Cubs. You should go big and go try to get somebody of impact who's available out there. And if Soto's available and you got the players to go get him, go frigging get him.
All right. Next topic. Is Kyle Schwarber, and this was courtesy of Gordon, he texted the group, you and I, today. You and I were texting and said, okay, I want to ask this question to you. Is Kyle Schwarber the worst non-tender in baseball history? And the answer is not even close.
Not even close. It was a trick question to you. So
it's David Ortiz.
David Ortiz.
And Johan Santana.
He wasn't a non-tender.
He was a Rule 5.
He was a Rule 5. So yeah. Was Roberto Clemente back when Rule 5 rules were different.
But Schwarber was an egregious mistake. Not letting him go because he didn't perform well. It was egregious because, A, they didn't replace him. B, they only did it to save money. They didn't do it and say, he doesn't fit here, but we're going to go get that guy. They just let him go.
They just did it for money. And what makes it in some ways worse than Ortiz. So the question is it one of the worst too? I think it might be. As we sit here right now, I think it is, given all the circumstances. So I've asked baseball people about this over the course of this past year. And I can't get long-term baseball people who like, well, let me think about that. And they don't come up with anybody comparable to those two, right? And one of the things that makes it a little bit worse for the Cubs is that his projected arbitration number was about $8 million. So he figured to make about $8 million the year they cut him loose going into the 2021 season. So instead they say, we're not paying the $8 million. We cut him. He becomes a free agent. He signs with the Nationals for $10 million. So they were going to pay less than what turned out to be market value for this player. They had him at less than market value and they let him go. Now, back when Ortiz was cut, his projected arbitration number was probably about $1.952 million. Then this was back in coming off the 2002 season, I believe.
Correct.
And Theo's boys picked him up in Boston after about 6 weeks of sitting out there. They got him for $1.25 million. So at least Theo's boys got him for under what the arbitration number would have been. At least the Twins realized they were paying more than he would probably get on the open market. And the Twins tried to trade him. The Cubs tried to trade Schwarber too, but people knew that these guys were non-tender decisions and they were going to get a shot at him without having to give up any players for him. So there was no trade market for him. But when, you know, Ortiz sat because he couldn't play defense and he had been hurt recently. So nobody knew what they were getting. Theo, if Theo's honest with you, he'll tell you he didn't know what he was getting. He stockpiled a whole bunch of DH first basemen that year going into spring training. And Ortiz didn't even become a regular player until like May.
Correct. And then he becomes a Hall of Fame player. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, right. It's the same thing when Theo told me when he puts out a survey to every scout and baseball employee, not the ushers, not the security, not the business. Every baseball ops employee gets a survey at the end of the season. And Jed's continued this and they put it on your desk.
I've seen these surveys.
and you fill it out, you know, what do you think we should improve? And what did you think of this? And what did you think of that? And the last question,
free agent pitchers, which one should we get?
No, it says, is there a player who is struggling somewhere else that you believe a change of scenery could help? And he said, I looked at this form and I had a bunch of dudes that wrote Jake Arrieta, and they went and got him. And the funny thing is, and I confirmed this with the White Sox. So the White Sox agree to a trade for Jake Arrieta before the Cubs get him. They agree with the Orioles, and they're trading. God, who was the reliever that the White Sox had? He was a journeyman, pretty good setup reliever. I'll look it up while we're talking. And the Orioles agree to the deal, and the White Sox reliever fails the physical. He is back on the market, and the Cubs get him.
Well, that wasn't ahead. That was a close to a month ahead of the trade deadline that year, and I don't know. I'm not going to say that account is wrong, because I can't. That's not the account I heard. And if you're going out there and you're saying, hey, who do you think's having who's a bounce back candidate? This is an off-season survey, right?
This is the year before survey, correct?
Yeah. So this is going into what year was that?
2013.
2013 season. He had to, struggle again in 2013. I'm trying to remember. I know he was Baltimore's opening day starter in either 12 or 13. It might have been that year.
Here it is. In the 2013 season, the Baltimore Orioles had some interest in acquiring White Sox reliever Jesse Crane. And Crane hurt his shoulder and never pitched again, they were on the verge of completing a deal for Jake Arrieta to the White Sox.
In
2013, before the Cubs got him.
In the same time frame.
Yes.
That's way ahead. I mean, so you're talking about a deal that would have been all but done except for the physical. And then the Cubs come in right after that, and they do scoop him up. All of this close to a month before the deadline.
Yeah.
That's a very strange turn of events there. I was told that the Orioles were in a position where they were done with Arrieta in terms of they were in a position where they were willing to trade him. And that during that season, it was brought to Theo's attention. Look, this guy has a lot of talent. They're not using him right. They've tried to put him in a box. It's not working. So you should go try to get him. And don't just believe me. Go send your scouts out there to look at him. So they did. They decided that this advice was accurate, and they took it. That's the way I heard it go down. I didn't hear it go down as anything that started before the season began.
Yeah. So if that goes down, who knows what happens with the Cubs? Like, everything can change. But my point is, I don't even know how we got into that conversation, but everything changes if you don't have quality pitching. To get back to your point, when we started this whole thing with Juan Soto, and now the Cubs need to go get starting pitching. And we talked about Kyle Schwarber being one of the worst non-tenders in baseball history. That's for sure, because not just did you lose the left-handed power, he would have taken you through in terms of a leadership role. You've developed a new chemistry. Now he would have replaced that role with Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and all those, Contreras, all those dudes. They'd have had an unbelievable leader in their clubhouse.
Let me ask you this. If you knew you were going to get between 155 and 162 games out of him each year, which is what the Phillies have gotten the last 2 years, and you knew you were going to get 46 or 47 home runs each year and an average of 100 ribs and 100 runs and an on-base percentage like he's always had, right around the 350 range. If you knew you were going to get that, would you have given him an extension at some point of 4 years, $79 million? Probably, right?
Probably right.
Yeah. So not only did you whack him for the sake of what amounted to $8 million, just money, and just lost him for nothing, but you could have probably kept this guy. And I can tell you, talking to Dombrowski, they love him in Philly. They love his clubhouse presence. We know that firsthand. And by the way, he's done nothing in 3 years since he left the Cubs but make the playoffs with the Red Sox, who traded for him after that first year, and he made an all-star team that year, with the Phillies last year, and he made an all-star team that year, and they got to the World Series that year, and the Phillies again this year, and they've got a chance to get to the World Series again after winning. They've won 4 out of 5 series since he joined the club. Now, they also have Bryce Harper. They have Zach Wheeler. They have a really nice team. But we know what Schwarber's brought to that club. And just statistically, you know, this dude hit 197 this year. So almost 20 points lower than he hit last year. But his on-base percentage went up by 20 points because he led the league in walks. Yep. And he hit all those home runs. And he drove in all those runs. And he scored all those runs. And he brings what he brings to the clubhouse. He's only missed the playoffs, I think, once in his career.
Well, he played in the playoffs in 15, 16, 17.
18.
Did the Cubs make it in 18?
And they made it in 18. That was the year that they went as a wild card and got beat.
Okay, they didn't make it in 19. So they went 50. That's right. They went 15, 16, 17, 18. Didn't make it in 19. Made it in 20. In 21, he played for Washington and Boston.
Gets traded to Boston. They go to the playoffs. They beat Rizzo's Yankees.
And then he goes to Philly, and he plays in the World Series in 22, and the playoffs, here he is in 23. Now,
3 different franchises. He's only missed the playoffs once. And by the way, the year he missed the playoffs, they won 84 games, and they were in it. I think they won 84. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But they were in it until about a week, 10 days left in the season. They were still alive.
In which year? 19?
19.
Yeah. But in the, again, I'm not here. Lord knows I'm not here to defend the Chicago Cubs. But he did
Wait
hit.
A minute. That's all you ever do.
No, I'm the hardest on them because we're the hardest on the people we love. I'm the one who's willing to hold them accountable.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
The Chicago Cubs, Kyle Schwarber's numbers in 2020, 188, 308, 554. Ain't real good, bud. Ain't real good.
100%. And 2020 was the pandemic season.
393, 701 OPS.
Right. So it was the and by the way, for the hit numbers and the batting average numbers, that's to be able to salvage a 700 OPS. When you're hitting like that is not nothing, but that was the pandemic year. That was 60 games. A lot of guys had super down years, guys that bounced back after that. And we know what happened, right? And this, and he's the example. He will always be history's example of how Cubs ownership reacted to the pandemic losses, the short-term pandemic losses, that year, with a competitive team, and they ran scared from those losses. And part of that was, I mean, it's one thing to trade Yu Darvish for a boatload of prospects and hope that they turn out. And it looks like one or two of them might have, but it's another thing to just cut a guy over money, over what amounts to a 1-year contract, get nothing for him. And it turns out you were like just dead wrong in a baseball sense. And really the intangibles as well.
I don't think, I'll let you go on this. I don't think Jed would have released him if he hadn't been given a mandate from ownership. I do not. I think 100%. Jed liked him as a player.
This was an ownership decision. This was how ownership responded to the pandemic. And so I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Gordon, have a great rest of your day, man. It's always fun chopping it up. We'll get into it, I'm sure, again next week. And
all right.
They go out and trade for Juan Soto. I'll just take my bow.
Yeah, you go ahead and take your bow on that.
get it done. And then
we'll see if we'll see if they sign Cody Bellinger right behind that.
We are going to get Scott Boras on this pod, and we are going to talk with him and have some fun.
Yes, we have been in touch with him, and he's agreed to come on. We're just trying to find a time that works.
You got it. Have a great rest of your day, man.
All right, you too, Cap.
All right, for Gordon Wittenmeyer, I'm David Kaplan. That is another fun, spirited edition of the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our YouTube Recap channel. Please hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell so you never miss any of our content. And it's available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. For Gordon, I'm Cap. Take that.